This episode is brought to you by Holy Stone Distilling, Utah's luxury, award-winning distillery, open for tours and tastings 21 years and older. Holy Stone's Perla Vodka is Utah's first grape-based vodka, which is too good to be true. Their Bozen Navy String Gin will blow your palate. It's the strongest gin in Utah, yet it's the most flavorful and extremely gentle on the palate. Holy Stone also makes Utah's first legal absinthe. Every time we share this absinthe to our friends, the look of joy on their face is priceless. These three items are located in both Utah liquor stores and within the walls of their distillery. Holy Stone also has the most beautiful, eye-catching purple Cerulea Gin, which some of the proceeds go to supporting breast cancer research. But let's not forget their Tsunami Sochu, which is made from koji, rice, and barley. This is the greatest compliment in any cocktail. Head to Holy Stone and Murray or hit them up on any social media platforms. Tell them we sent you and keep supporting local by buying local. Until the next spirits, my friends. You're listening to The Taste Masters, where we sit down and learn from artists within the world of craft beer, liquor, and various fermentation techniques. All right, guys, we are spoiled and we are in the heart of Level Crossing. This is weird. This is super cool. You got live music right now. You have people in the bar, in the tap room. You have brewing going on right now. I'm joined with my co-host today, Jay.
Yeah.
Jay, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much.
This is your first co-hosting.
Yeah, I'm glad to be back.
Right? What have you been up to?
Traveling, taking beer tests, and working. So, nothing too fun.
And drinking good beer, though?
Drinking good beer.
That's always good.
Drinking good beer.
So, I have in front of you, which I'm kind of excited to, but an award-winning beer maker, Chris Dietrich. Chris, welcome to the show, brother.
Hello, thanks for having me.
How you doing, man?
Yeah, welcome to Level Crossing.
Yeah, I feel like every time I come here, when it's after 5, it's always bumping, dude.
It's a fun time.
Seriously, you got a tent out there? You got music, I heard?
We do. We have a lot live music on the weekends and, of course, delicious wood-fired pizzas and beer.
Oh, yeah. Tell us about this. The beer you have in front of us.
So the beer we have in front of us is our Suss It Out. It's a rye IPA, and it is one of the beers that I love the most because I've brewed it the most, and I have the most history with it. When I was a home brewer in my garage, I made this beer probably about 100 different times with different hops and malts and yeast and just trying to find that ever-perfect combination of all those ingredients. And I was able to make it here on a commercial scale. So
no way.
Here it is.
Cheers, brother. This is awesome. Yeah. That's super cool. This is really cool. See, I'm not a rye fan, but it's gentle on the rye. I like that.
It's one of my favorite things about it. Especially with rye beers, in my experience, they go overboard way too fast. And a lot of brewers end up having these really rye, spicy beers. But the subtlety is great because it adds that complexity in the background without overtaking an IPA.
Right. So, I mean, that's one of the things I was playing around with. I mean, I made a version of this that was upwards of 30% rye, and then some as low as 3%. And all okay, but settle on a kind of sweet spot in the middle there. And I think the rye helps complement the hops that are in there. And it's enough to be noticeable, but not to kind of turn anyone away that might not like rye.
Yeah, that's awesome. And you said 100 times homebrewing, huh?
Yes. I mean, it was one of I brewed with two other friends, and it was our favorite beer to make and drink. And with three of us, those homebrew batches went fairly quickly. Wanted to make more, so
tell me, I want to go into that. One of my questions for you is homebrewer. So you used to be a homebrewer.
That's correct.
Were you an award-winning homebrewer as well? Did you get some medals out there? Did you get some accolades?
I did, and actually a version of this rye IPA, it won the Beehive Brew Off, and I was able to do the Pro-Am with Uinta Brewing, and we made the Cahoots double rye IPA.
No way,
and
that was you?
That was.
That was an awesome beer.
I love that beer, and that was about a 9.5% version of this. Similar but different hops. But yeah, we entered that in the program at the Great American Beer Festival, and had a great great time brewing at Uinta.
Hell yeah. What's the style in your home brewing? What's the style that you wanted to nail but you never nailed, in your opinion?
That's a good question.
Because you must have made
hundreds. Yeah, just too good that you nailed everything, right?
No, that's not true. Okay. Probably a Berliner Weiss, actually. Yeah? The first batch I ever did of that beer turned out phenomenal, and I loved it. And I thought on subsequent batches I did everything the same, but they were not the same, and they were not nearly as good as that first batch. I haven't spent too much time to figure out why, but could probably revisit that style.
You're a busy man, so have we ever seen another attempt at that?
No, not yet.
Not anytime soon?
Not to say there couldn't be, but nothing is currently scheduled.
Because you have small brewer's batches, right?
We do.
How big are the, how many gallons is that, or how many barrels?
It's about 15 gallons. It's actually to our right here. That's my original homebrew setup. That was in my garage.
Oh, hell yeah.
And so we still brew to that pretty regularly, making small batches to serve in the tap room.
So I think the last homebrew I had here from you, brewer's batch, excuse me, was Oktoberfest.
Mm-hmm.
And that one, I was like, wait a second, I got a sneak peek of that one, because I showed up a day early on accident.
That's right.
And then the bartender, it was already kegged, or it was on the kegerator, and I was like, hell yeah. Everyone wants Oktoberfest-style beers, right?
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, It's hard to do. It's hard to get right, but it's one of my favorite beers. I love this kind of season, and the fall season, especially as you get your Oktoberfest, your English beers, and all the kind of like UK origin.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, Gary will be brewing his brown ale tomorrow that we'll have on Nitro here coming up in a few weeks.
Nitro brown ale.
So yeah, my old homebrew system is still
that's so cool, dude.
Kicking and pumping out some
still
fun
alive.
Beers. That's right.
You named it?
Did not. Did
yet.
Not.
I think you should name it. Give it a little title.
I mean, it's going to have to be Bill Murray related. I mean,
yeah, tell us about that. You were talking about that earlier. All your tanks are Bill Murray related.
That's right. I mean, legally, all our fermenting vessels and bright tanks need to be numbered or labeled in some way. And instead of just having a tank 1, 2, 3, 4 or ABCD, we're pretty big Bill Murray fans around here, so we decided to name every tank after Bill Murray movie characters.
That's really cool, man.
So, yeah, to our right is Big Earn. So it would probably be appropriate if I named that homebrew system something in the realm of Bill Murray.
Yeah. I like that, dude. So what got you into brewing? Why beer? Why are you a brewer? Take me on that route. I want to hear about this story.
One of the reasons is when I was in high school and college, I traveled to Germany and was going around from little town to little town. And there was each little town had their own brewery. And at the time, though I didn't have much beer experience, I thought they were making some of the best beers that I've ever had in my life. So, granted, they were some of the first beers I'd ever had in my life. But I just thought it was great to go into little communities, and they had their own brewery that everyone was so proud of, and making great beer.
Sure.
And so going back to college and trying to find similar styles of beer in Missouri, where I was going to school, there were certainly good beers there, but not necessarily the ones I remembered or wanted to continue drinking. And my roommates and I were like, well, we could try and make this, and we did.
Yeah.
Not to say our first several dozen batches were any good, because they certainly were not, but kept going and kept brewing and kept learning about the art and science of brewing beer, and that was the start.
And then just like downhill from there, just shoom, that rabbit hole of just beer, huh?
Pretty much, right. And so after I graduated school in Missouri, I came out to Utah to work as a newspaper photographer at the Tribune, and kept on brewing in my garage, and just snowballed. And
so how the hell did you get level crossing? How'd you end up in this place?
A mutual friend of our founder, Mark Madura, and I introduced he and I together. And as we like to say, it was love at first sip. And
I like that.
He's coming from his background is up at High West Distilling, and he had a wonderful business plan. He tried an early version of Suss It Out, and he loved it. And that was it. I mean, that was about as simple as.
I like that, but it's appropriate to have this beer, this first one. That's really cool. I didn't know the story behind that. That's awesome. So you have a lot of. I'm going to go a little across. The names you have for some of your the ones that are in stores and everything, like kind of on tap always, they're kind of jazzy. And why is that?
Music plays a big back, or music has always played a big part in my life and Mark's life and a lot of employees here. And it's, one, we like to have fun. I mean, what's the point of having your own brewery if you can't have some fun? So, a lot of the label names are music related, just because I grew up in a very musical household. My brothers and mom and dad are all musicians, all professional musicians currently. We had a family band growing up. So music was always all around growing up.
Yeah.
So it was just kind of natural to incorporate music into some of the labels.
I like that. So about what instrument do you play?
Or violin.
Instruments. Violin?
Nope.
That's really good. Jay, do you play an instrument?
I do not. I wish.
Yeah.
It's a lot of talent and
like
time.
Like cowbell, maybe triangle?
Yeah, I could probably do that.
Probably.
Can I'm clap on clap on beat.
I can't.
Know?
Yeah, I can't clap on beat. So you're one-upping me on
that
one.
The world can always use some more cowbell.
Yeah, exactly.
God damn. Violin, man?
Violin, yes.
That's really... Do you still play or ever pick it up?
A little bit.
Yeah?
But no, my brothers and I are all classically trained violinists. And my mom, also a violinist. Started this all when we were 3 years old, and so violin and music was our life. Was our life.
Right, I see your face on that. I feel like violin and being a flautist are the things that I've always, like, I was enamored with.
Mm-hmm.
The old people that can just play those flutes, and I'm like, how the hell do you do that? I tried blowing in one once, and it failed. Failed miserably. I'd rather do a harmonica and just blow in something, you know? Yeah. God damn.
Or a kazoo. Go that
kazoo.
Route.
Kazoo is perfect.
I like that. So homebrewing became Level Crossing. Level Crossing, you're making a name for yourself, brother. You really are.
Thank you.
I mean, you have great beer. You're award-winning. What's it like to win your first GABF medal? You know, when you guys did your first, like...
I mean, it was astounding because it was for this beer. It was for Suss It Out. So this beer that I've been brewing at home all those years, trying to perfect to what I wanted to drink and what I think others would want to drink... it was our first canned beer we had here, and less than 6 months after we opened, it won bronze at the Great American Beer Festival. I mean, it was to say it was mind blowing was an understatement. I mean, it was awesome.
That's awesome, dude. I mean, you're sitting here nursing this baby, this brainchild of yours, and then to actually get an accolade from it—that's really cool, dude. And good for you, man.
Thank you.
Nothing but applause. And then you just. GABF 2021, you bring back another bronze.
We did for our Vienna Lager.
Vienna Lager. Tell us about that one real quick.
Well, all props to assistant brewer Gary McShane, and it was a style he wanted to make and had made it at home as a home brewer himself. And we made one batch, and that was the one batch
and
that won.
Kicked ass, huh?
It was awesome.
That's
so
really cool.
It was, again, I mean... Very humbling to be there, and I mean, there's so many great brewers locally, in the
for sure,
nationally and internationally.
But. Yeah, but think about it, Chris is like Utah has a great scene,
mm-hmm.
and the fact that I say this multiple times, but people kind of look at Utah like Utah beer, but we're making damn good beer here,
absolutely.
And the fact that you're a part of that, and I'm at the same table with you, I'm like. Yeah, we make good beer, and over here just pointing at you, man, because it's really cool, like, kind of flex as, you know, Utah's kind of that redhead stepchild, and to walk away with a bunch of medals the past couple of years, like, fuck yeah, you're up there with the big dogs, dude, that's really cool.
Thank you. No, it's badass.
Yes, it is.
And again, it's fun. It's fun.
And you're having fun, and it's palpable. I can see you're having fun when you make beers, new releases, because I remember you came out with, and we'll get back on that one, but these... The Red Feather series. Mm-hmm. Well, we can get into that one. So the Red Feather series, one-offs, right? Just different. So tell us about what's this Red Feather you guys are talking about?
So the Red Feather, what's with the Red Feather?
Yeah.
All right, so the Red Feather is, so from Mark's family, his grandmother, for dinner, like holidays, family got together, she would always leave an empty place setting at the dinner table. And as kids, they'd be like, Grandma, what's this place setting for? And she would always say it's for Red Feather. And so for her, it was for like the traveler, the weary traveler in the night, or the stranger, or the friend, or family member that needs a place to stay. And it was just a sign that everyone is welcome here, and there's always a place here for you.
That's fucking
and
cool.
And so that was Mark's, that was his pretty much purpose. And everything we're doing here at Level Crossing stems from that kind of Red Feather mentality. So we want everyone to feel welcome here, and there's always going to be a place here for you.
Man. That's really cool.
That is really cool. I mean, Jay, have you always felt welcomed when you come to Level Crossing?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, not just welcome, but, like, everyone else wants to come here as well, and there's a reason. Like, this place, like we were talking about, is packed. It's a fun place to be. It's a fun atmosphere. It has great beer, great pizza. There's no reason not to want to come, so... Good job.
Yeah. Thank you.
And you guys are keeping that going, and you guys are humble about it, and I appreciate that. That's really cool. The thing is, I've only had one bad experience here. I ate my pizza too fast and burnt my tongue for the rest of the time, so I ruined my palate. But besides that, it's great, because you have pizza coming out of wood-burning stoves, right?
That's right.
And so I didn't realize that. Taking the bite of pizza, and then just, you know how it tastes like rubber? I'm like, damn it. You fuck.
You blew it.
I did. But your pizza, like, it's hard to do that, like a brick oven kind of a pizza. You know what I mean?
Oh, they're so delicious.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so happy that you have it.
Yeah, because beer and pizza are like...
Beer and pizza, but that brick oven just adds a whole different kind of level to it. That's excellent.
Absolutely. So, Chris, I said we could break down another beer.
Let's do it.
Since we talk about the Red Feather, let's break a Red Feather one. Whichever one you... Surprise us, I guess. We did talk about White Salamander. You bring that one? So speaking of like cool names, is when I saw this one come out, I literally... Oh, I'm good, brother. But at the... when you released this name, I laughed my ass off. The White Salamander, and I'm like, you know, I think I even messaged you. I'm like, dude, you that name of the year. Like, that is 100% name of the year.
Again, we like to have fun with our beer naming, and
so what? Give us the backstory of the White Salamander. This is a double hazy IPA, correct?
It is a fruited hazy IPA.
Fruited hazy IPA.
That's correct. With passion fruit, caracara orange, and guava.
Guava and caracara orange, huh? Tell you what.
So, in those with those three fruits, and the kind of the low pH and acidity of those fruits, while this is not a sour beer, it is quite tart, and it can fool some people into thinking it is a sour beer, but it is not. It is
deceiving.
Yeah.
It is.
Jay.
Extremely refreshing. I mean, with the tartness like you're talking about, it just makes it really easy drinking for, and I believe it's a higher percentage as well.
It is. It's 8.2%.
Yep.
ABV.
Doesn't drink like it. Drinks very smooth, velvety. You get kind of like that full hazy fluffiness to it in the mouthfeel. It's a fun beer. I know when it came out, we had just come, I think, the day it came out, and it was very happy with it that we had stayed a little bit.
I do love a good mimosa, but this, for me, is a perfect...
Yep. Brunch beer.
Brunch beer.
Oh, this is God. A perfect that's right. brunch beer.
That's
yep. Right.
That's deceiving. Yeah, I get a lot of the passion fruit and the guava, like that, those tropical fruits, like right there. Mm-hmm. I like that.
Yeah.
It totally is a brunch beer, huh?
Yeah.
I can see why people would think it'd be sour, but it's not sour. It's just really tart. I can see that.
That's correct. I mean, off the top of my head, don't remember what the pH is of the final beer, but it is significantly lower than most of our other beers.
Right.
Got
so
it.
Is this going to be a one-time thing? Are you going to bring it back? Or are you going to...
So the whole point and intention of the Red Feather beers is to have, one, like a fun playground for us brewers to have and do styles that we might not normally do year-round. You know, use different malts, hops, yeast, any fun new wild ingredient that we want to that might not be always viable on a regular year-round commercial production schedule. The Red Feathers gives us this whole new line to have fun,
yeah,
and you know make new and interesting styles that we want to drink ourselves and want to share with others.
For the Red Feather, that place is always available at the table,
uh-huh.
And you don't know who what traveler is going to come in, and you don't know what story. You don't know if it's going to be some guy with dreads or some clean shaven guy or a bearded guy or some lady with a bunch of cats. You have no idea, right? And so I feel like this makes sense because that person that shows up to the table, it's a different person, different character, different personality. I like that.
That's right. But the other thing, though, with that is the beers we're releasing, we're doing about one a month.
Oh, damn.
And so when they're out, when they're sold out, they're out. But then they'll likely come back the same month the following year.
Okay.
Oh, we're not even 3 years old yet, so we don't have a whole lot of year
over year
sales. But the intention is for those styles, those same beers to come back once a year.
Okay. So this is a two-part question.
Mm-hmm.
Which one is your personal, Chris, your personal favorite Red Feather beer you've released? And which one is the most popular and or most asked about?
Mm-hmm. Just like my kids, I've got two. I got two favorites.
It's okay.
All right.
Then name them.
So Space Oddity, that one's probably my favorite.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's a cool label, by the way.
All right. So Space Oddity is a double hazy IPA made with all space themed hops. And so there's Strata and Comet and Orbit and Euconaut and Galaxy, and I mean it's a celebration of all things space hop. And again, it was one of the beers I made at home in my garage, and I just loved it so much. And one of the special things with that is the Orange Blossom Honey Edition that just works so well with those tropical fruit flavors of all the space-themed hops. I love that
Look
beer.
At you. I like it's that so face. Good. You see that smile you just did?
Oh, yeah.
Dude, yeah.
It's so good. It's Hell so good. Yeah. So that comes out. We released the first one on our first anniversary.
Yes, you did.
And the second one came out on our second. So that one, right now, that'll be our anniversary beer going forward. Unless we come up with some other, fun beer that...
Mm-hmm.
And the second one. Second favorite.
Second favorite is it's the Red Sea Rift. So it's an Imperial Coffee Stout. And again, I made that at home for many, many years. And it utilizes a coffee from a good friend, Cruiser, at Jack Mormon Coffee.
I've been
using Jack Mormon Coffee in my coffee-style beers for decade plus.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a great relationship. And so when I have a new style of beer I want to add coffee to, we'll sit down, drink the beer. He's a coffee wizard. And so he can point me into which bean and what kind of roast will work well with that beer. And so we've done that many, many times to find the perfect coffee for the beer that I'm making.
So without taking away any of your, trade secrets, essentially, brewing a coffee beer is hard, especially to get that coffee piece in the beer. And so especially from, a homebrew scale to commercial seems like a big leap. Was it in the homebrew that you did a lot of testing with, ground beans versus whole beans versus the cold press, and what kind of worked?
It is. And, we tried almost every variation of types of roasting and forms of the finished bean, not to mention different types of the bean itself. My biggest pet peeve for coffee beers is when they come off as more green bell pepper.
Mm-hmm.
Some coffee beers, to me, have a green bell pepper flavor and aroma, and it's an immediate turnoff for me. So that was one of the things that we worked very hard to not have in these beers. One, it's bean variety specific. We found some beans had more bell pepper in the final product, but it was more on how the bean was roasted. And so we did a bunch of testing on how we like the beans roasted and how they presented in the final beer. And
no way.
We're on to...
Do you have a problem with astringency when it comes to adding coffee in a beer?
Not much, but if you treat... If in the back of your mind when you're developing your recipe, treating the coffee is almost another bitter hop addition. Okay. And so I dialed back some of the hop bitterness, knowing that the coffee is going to impart its own bitterness. It's just something to be aware of.
Gotcha.
And certainly, you know, I've had some good coffee beers that are extra bitter or astringent because it was just too much.
Gotcha. But, Are you ever going to use a different coffee company, ever?
At this moment, no.
Yeah. I mean, there's no reason to.
I have no reason to. Right. Yeah.
If it's working, why not? Yeah. That's really cool.
I mean, it's like the brewing community. I mean, a lot of the small businesses in Salt Lake have great relationships with each other. So, I mean, I love working with Cruiser, and he makes killer coffee. And
I remember when that one came out, and I had my buddy... one of my biggest supporters. And he goes, "Okay, listen, Level Crossing just came out with this badass coffee beer." I'm like, "Prove it." Next day, has it right in front of me. He goes, "Taste this right fucking now." Fuck you, Chris.
Yeah. Well, and that's another cool thing about having our own wood fire pizza oven is the oatmeal toasted, the oatmeal we use in the beer, I toasted in the pizza
oven. Oh, my God. That's crazy.
So it was a little crazy because... hand toasting 200 plus pounds of flaked oats one tray at a time in the pizza oven.
How long did that take you?
It took most of a morning, and our gracious pizza cooks, I was in their space making a whole big mess with the flaked oats. But at the end of the day, toasted oats.
Made the difference.
They make a huge difference. I mean, just smelling and tasting them coming out of the oven when it smells like oatmeal raisin cookies, absolutely translates into the final beer. Now, I say that, but there's so many other fun things in that beer. I mean, there's the toasted oatmeal, obviously the coffee in two different forms. There's lactose milk sugar. There's chocolate conspiracy cocoa nibs.
Oh, cool.
It's just a big-ass imperial stout.
So. Yeah, and so you have a lot of collaborations right there.
You do, right. So
so when it comes to collaborations, what other beers do you have that are collaborations with either other vendors, other brewers? Have you done a collaboration with another brewery?
We have. I've done several, actually, with Nils up at Wasatch in Park City. We did a beer for it was a Utah Brewers Guild collaboration festival, and then we had a canned beer that we did together. As at the time, I was the youngest brewery in the state, and Wasatch Squatters is the oldest
brewery in the state. Right?
So, they've been around, doing great things. We've done a couple collaborations with local brewers, and then the other collaborations we've been doing are, so we have a beer now called Rising Hope, and it's a beer that this year, I think 45 other breweries around the country have done, and it's all raising money for pediatric cancer research.
Oh, cool.
And so everyone's brewing a similar recipe, and all the grain and hop and other vendors have donated all the materials, and so we're all raising money for pediatric cancer research with those beers.
That's awesome.
The second year we've done that, and it's awesome. It's awesome to be able to give back and use our beer for such a great cause.
Absolutely. Are we going to see a collaboration with a Utah brewery, like besides Wasatch, here local in Salt Lake?
Sure, yeah.
Who's someone that you love that you want to do collaboration with so bad?
We have such an awesome
crew
of Utah brewers.
You can name a couple. There's some breweries I want to make a beer with you, dude.
I'd love to do a beer with Fisher. The crew over there is fantastic. We both have similar journalism experiences, Colby and I. I think we could we could have some fun together.
Level Fisher beer? I'm okay with that.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, that sounds great.
Yeah. What's a style?
You Fisher get? On the level?
Fisher, ah. Yeah. Fisher Crossing?
There you go. You already have your...
Yeah, just says Fish Crossing.
Fish Crossing?
Sure.
So what's a style of beer here at Level Crossing that you haven't released yet that you want to release?
One of the ones that I'm excited about that's coming out in a couple weeks, we have a double IPA that's sour. So it'll be our first big release of our sour beer, and it's using a newer strain of yeast. It's called Philly Sour, and this Philly Sour yeast, like the name implies, is coming from Philadelphia, and the yeast. It was discovered. It was harvested from a dogwood tree in a cemetery in Philadelphia, and the school propped it up and did tests with it. And lo and behold, it is a wonderful fermenter of beer that not only produces alcohol and CO2, but also lactic acid at the same time. So it's
what the hell?
Like, it sounds too good to be true.
It
That's
does.
What I thought.
Oh yeah.
But over the spring and summer, we did probably half dozen, 10 different test batches with it on the small scale to see how that yeast would do under different beer styles and temperatures and just recipe designs. And for the most part, it was phenomenal. I mean, you treat it like a regular yeast. You don't have to kettle sour. You're not adding wild yeast or bacteria to your brewery.
Yeah.
And
no way.
It's something pretty special, I think.
I was going to say, when you said that, and you're saying a new beer or a yeast strain coming out, I've tried it once because of how easy and convenient it is. You don't have to worry about that cross-contamination and cleaning everything and hoping nothing else you have gets, contaminated. So it's fun to see that that's actually coming out on, like, a brewery scale.
Oh,
it is fun, and some of the, I mean, I love most kettle sour beers.
Mm-hmm.
It's not my favorite go-to style, but there are some out there that are like, holy shit, that's quite good.
Mm-hmm.
But the Philly Sour is, to me, just a little bit more complex, and at least in the recipe we used with it, it's presenting itself as this huge, like, tropical pineapple mango flavor and aroma with a very nice and bright, like, acidic tartness. The first time I tasted it on a test batch, I was like, how is this possible?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
it surprises you. I'm excited to get to try that. It's a fun yeast.
It
opens up a ton of options.
It sure is. I mean, we could kettle sour here,
takes forever.
Why not make things a little bit easier for everybody?
Yeah, absolutely. Damn, I'm pumped for that. When's that come out?
2 weeks from today, so gotcha. December 3rd.
Damn,
so Friday, December 3rd.
December? That's awesome. Right. What a great day.
So whether or not you take this info or not, you should try some roasted pineapple inside your pizza oven. If you're already doing oats and everything else, roasted pineapple and a sour IPA is phenomenal.
Ooh.
Try that. I've tried some home brews that did that. It adds just a little bit of something to it. So
I like that. Now, side story, it was a stretch just to get pineapple into the kitchen to make the pizza. but pineapple pizza, Hawaiian pizza, to me, like, I grew up with that.
Yeah.
It's my favorite.
But people diss on it. Why?
It's
awesome.
Know.
I love it.
They are anti-pineapple pizza people.
Yeah, get out of here.
But to me, no, that's a perfect pizza. But I had to fight to get it on the menu, and I'd bring in my own pineapple and just throw it on, and finally.
You got to have a Hawaiian. Like, I'm sorry, right, I have to.
We'll get it on the menu, and, now I've got my name on a pizza.
So, oh, yeah?
It's Dietrich's.
That's really cool.
Hawaiian pizza. It's fantastic.
My favorite smoked pineapple one was the Proper's Primordial, which was the Primordial Sea. That smoked pineapple, oh, God. So I'm telling you, smoked pineapple, I think, does really well. Fuck with it, Chris. Please.
All right.
Because you're making great beer. I want to see that.
Yeah.
Jay, now you got. Let's go, Chris.
All right. We'll do it. Let's have another beer.
Let's do it. Which one do you want to open up, brother? I mean, you got some options. So you talked about you have your name on a pizza. So you just pulled out, you have your face on a beer. Okay, so Chris, it looks you look like Jesus in this one. So tell us about this one real quick.
So this is the Eternal Pursuit, and it's a Belgian dark strong beer. And the inspiration for this beer was a trip that I did with my two brothers, and we went to Belgium for 2 weeks about 12 years ago. And we traveled around for 2 weeks going to all the small towns in Belgium, visiting the Trappist breweries,
of
family breweries, just small town Belgian breweries
that were brewing
some of the best beers in the world. And so from that experience, I wanted to brew a beer that kind of encapsulated the beers I was tasting and experiencing that...
that's the start of the homebrewing. You wanted to encapture OG, and you wanted to make it yourself, a clone, if you will.
Different country, but similar kind of mind-opening experiences that...
That's beautiful.
Wanted to bring back.
Yeah. And how beer does that to us, right? Mm-hmm. What a hard life we have.
No, I know. Right. So the Trappist breweries were, beautiful and making world-class beers, of course. But I had better experiences at some of the smaller family breweries. One in particular named Didola. It's a Belgian brewery that the father, he's been brewing since like 1980. The mom is running the accounting and marketing, and the son at the time was running the bar. And it's small enough that when it comes bottling day, people from the town come and help them bottle the beer.
Oh, no way, that's really cool.
And his 94-year-old mom gave me the brewery tour. So
that's awesome.
I show up on a random Sunday, and it wasn't very busy, and they just took me in. They're like, hey, you're a home brewer? Let's show you around, take you in.
That's really cool.
And we had an amazing afternoon. And it was one of those, the hospitality of a stranger coming into your place, and you don't know who they are or what their backstory is, but they didn't care. They treated me like family, and that's... Mark had his Red Feather upbringing experiences, and to me that was one of mine.
Yeah, that's surreal.
Certainly one of the things I want to continue carrying on here.
Damn, Chris.
That's really cool. Yeah.
Super cool. I can't wait. Let's go. Oof. Love the color, by the way. Look at that.
So one of my questions about, especially as I'm, trying this, and Belgian beers can be really hard to make. Mm-hmm. And I feel like there's a reason we don't see them as much inside the U.S. because they're hard beers. Mm-hmm. They take a lot more time. They have a lot more, in general, traditional methods. So often with decoctions or candied sugar and mm-hmm. adjuncts. What of those did you kind of adopt or use or find maybe workarounds for?
The mash schedule on this was more of a traditional Belgian. We're not set up to be a decoction brewery, but we did do multiple temperature mash rests for this beer. We certainly did use dark candy sugar in the boil, and then Belgian yeast. It was all Belgian base malts, Belgian and German hops. I'm pretty traditional through and through. I mean, I love this style of beer, and while I do love and appreciate barrel-aged versions of dark strongs, I don't come across too many non-barrel-aged dark strongs or ones that don't have some other adjunct in it. So I just wanted to make
a
straight-up dark strong. And
is this your first attempt at a dark strong?
I did a couple at home, but yes, yeah, first one.
So why Eternal? Awesome. Where did the name come from? Eternal Pursuit.
Eternal Pursuit. Well, it's because home brewing and I'm always on the eternal pursuit of making better beer. So that's.
Now, why are you Jesus on this one?
That's actually a great segue, though. For all of these Red Feather series and even just your regular can art, Your can art is phenomenal. And I feel like it's one of those that oftentimes can be an oversight. But when you're going and you're like looking at that beer in that beer case or even on your way out of the tap room, mm-hmm. It really can do a lot to kind of draw your eye in. That I'm just curious, like, who does your guys' art? Who, you know? Like,
yeah, no, shout out to our good friend and local artist, Joe Howell. He's done most of all of our, you know, most of our labels, especially the Red Feather ones. And he just, I mean, he kicks ass every single
time. Your labels are cool. Mm-hmm. That's for sure.
So on the Eternal Pursuit, my beard at the time was a little more generous. He certainly...
I love it.
He made it happen. It looks...
It's really
cool. It's fantastic. And then on the back, we've got the three little silhouettes for my brothers and I. But yeah, I mean, ultimately, this was a beer I wanted to make for my brothers and family.
Cool.
And send them the beer and have them get the same feelings remembering our awesome trip we had together over a decade ago.
Damn, that's beautiful. The more I get to know, you know, the backstories of the beers you're making, Chris, it's just beautiful. It really is. It's really cool. And I like this a lot.
Oh, yeah. No, this is excellent. It's a really good Belgian strong, and frankly, or dark strong, you can't find them.
And then,
which is
a subset, so it is in the Red Feather series, but my intention then for the Eternal Pursuit is, I mean, we had so many different amazing styles of beers in Belgium. I mean, as much as I'd love to just make that, every year I'll probably choose a different Belgian style of beer, and to showcase one of the other fantastic, you know, beers.
That's really cool.
I can't just choose one. It's so difficult.
No, you can't. There's so many great styles. There's not one perfect style.
Is there anything holding you back from opening up more of your, like, taps or more of your, you know, canned beers to Belgian style?
I mean, there are some production constraints to trying to keep up with a lot of our core brands. Mm-hmm.
I think they're not sexy sometimes. And the, you know, consumers, mm-hmm. it's hard because as a brewers and people who enjoy the beer, sure. we like the Belgians, we like the Funkies, we like the, mm-hmm. you know, old school styles. But right now, it's the haze train, right? And that's what pays the bills, unfortunately. For
Well, but we do have a full-time Belgian blonde. I mean, Dallas Howell's is
great.
Around, year round. And I love that because it is... It's complex, but simple, mm-hmm. and it's one of those beers that, for me, you can drink it and not think about it, and it's going to be great. Or you can pause and drink it, and really, you know, do a deep dive into what you're tasting and smelling and experiencing, and you'll have a different, you have a different experience.
Yeah.
Or you can just not think about it and also enjoy it equally. So.
Interesting. I like that. Good question, Jay.
Well, thank you.
No, but on that note, we're going to take a quick break and come back because, Chris, I got some good questions for you. Sound good?
I don't doubt it. All right.
This episode is brought to you by Syrup Co. Syrup Co. makes simple syrups for your cocktails, coffee drinks, sodas, and more. Nate and Jacob started Syrup Co. in 2020 as a way for people to create tasty drinks at home that are accessible and easy to make. They cook, bottle, and label every single bottle themselves right here in Salt Lake City. Try their new limited holiday syrup sampler featuring butter pecan, cranberry sauce, and candy cane. Hell yeah! No matter your favorite holiday drink, this sampler pack will not let you down. Find their syrup at a handful of local retailers or buy direct on their website. And get free delivery in the Salt Lake Valley. Use the code TASTEMASTERS upon checkout for 15% off your order. That's right. Use the code TASTEMASTERS for 15% off your order. Trust us when we say this is syrup you cannot miss out on. Until the next syrup, my friends. This episode is brought to you by Hopkins Brewing Company. Hopkins Brewing is located off 21st South in Salt Lake. Hopkins has live music, local art, and they use locally grown and sustainable ingredients in both their food and craft beer. Their food menu is off the charts. Their handcrafted beer is also fantastic. Upon checking out, use the code TASTEMASTERS to get 10% off any food. That's right, Use the code TASTEMASTERS to get 10% off your entire meal. Come get a pint at Hopkins and support your local breweries. This episode's also brought to you by you, if you wanted to be. We are looking for sponsors and would love to have you as part of our team. Feel free to email us for details at thetastemastersdrink@gmail.com or DM us through all social media platforms.
All right, guys, we're back, and we're going to try some of my favorite beers here at Level Crossing. Chris, what did you pour for us today?
So, in front of us today is our Coffee Uncommon and then our Red Sea Rift Imperial Coffee Stout.
Jay, have you had both of these?
I actually don't know if I've had either. Because you said the coffee uncommon.
Okay, so
that one I don't know.
It's a Kentucky common, but you're calling it the uncommon. Why? For those who don't know,
it's a. I mean, so the base beer. All right, backstory. When we first were opening up, and 4% draft beer was still the law of the land. The intention for the draft beers that we wanted to brew and sell. I wanted them to be all appropriate at 4% ABV. And so the Kentucky Common style of beer is historically a low ABV style of beer. And not one that I hadn't really ever had before, or most people have had before. But it's an old historical style, obviously from Kentucky, that fit the parameters of what we were looking to do with our draft beer. And we went for it. And the first couple test batches... it was like, well, shit, that's a really interesting style of beer. And one of the things I like about it is that, although, yeah, it's medium brown, darker in color, because of the amount of corn in the mash, it drinks like a light cream ale. And so it's this optical illusion of a beer where... I'll put this in front of somebody and they're like, oh, I don't like light or I don't like dark beer.
Like
so it's
going
to be heavy and thick. I'm just like, just try it.
Humor me, mm-hmm. Right?
Just try it. And they do. And they're like, well, holy shit, that's really refreshing. And so it's a fun style of beer. And, I mean, for what it is, I enjoy drinking it. And for people that, come in and say might want a, light beer, just a whatever mass-produced light beer. I'll give this to them all day, every day, because if you didn't see it,
you would have known.
You would not know.
No way.
But then, so this version, though, while the base beer is fantastic, I still love the Jack Mormon coffee, and I was like, well, let's throw some coffee at the Utah Uncommon. And see what happens. And the coffee version of this beer was exponentially more well received than the base beer.
Really?
And so we
have
kept going with it. So.
I mean, it smells like morning. I just woke up at 5, like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. No, it smells super good. And it is really smooth. It has very clean, crisp, like you said, that cream ale.
Right.
And that kind of like gentle corn.
Mm-hmm.
Character.
And yeah, I mean, as much as I'd love a great Imperial Stout, there's something to be said about having a really fresh coffee flavored beer that's not going to mess you up.
Yeah.
And you can drink a couple pints of and enjoy. Yeah.
This is one of my favorite beers here. That's why I told you earlier, Chris, I'm like, the Uncommon. I want that. Yeah, this is fantastic.
Do you lager, or do you do anything kind of like a steam beer where it might be, you know, the whole ale yeast lager fermentation?
We do, yes. We use our house ale yeast just at a lower temperature for fermentation, and then add a whole lot of Jack Mormon coffee to it.
Are we doing a cold brew? Like how are you adding the coffee in this one?
Two different ways, just like the Red Sea Rift. So we're using a cold brewed concentrate, and then in the bright tank is whole beans. So it's a double dose of the coffee.
Yeah.
But with this one, we've changed it 3 or 4 times because there hasn't just been one variety of bean that's worked well. I mean, there's like a whole family of these beans that Cruiser has recommended, and he hasn't been wrong yet. So
I like that a lot. So then next to it, you have the Red Sea Drift, right?
Red Sea Rift.
Red Sea Rift. Okay. And Jay, haven't tried this one yet, right? Oh, girl, get wrecked.
I have not. So
see that nose, dude. Different bean, though.
They are different beans. That's correct. The Red Sea Rift gets its name because the bean used in it is the Red Sea blend.
Okay.
And so it's a blend of three different beans. It's a blend of three different beans from the Red Sea region.
No way. That's really cool.
And as you can see on our label, we have our coffee bean Moses parting the Red Sea.
Oh my God, I didn't notice that. Well, I did not notice
great.
That.
Great. Huh?
That cracks me up. Staff. That makes me extremely happy. That makes me super happy.
we got coffee bean Moses here.
Coffee bean Moses.
Yeah, the staff and
Jesus, Chris, coffee. See, I see biblical over here.
It's fitting as a son of a minister.
Shit! I had no idea.
Yeah, so we got music and religious connotations in that.
Dude, I like this one. This one, for me personally, the coffee. I always expect it more like astringent. It's not. It's not palate wrecking either. It's still there, but it's not. It didn't destroy it. I can still taste other things. And then I thought it'd be heavy. Like you look at it, it's. I thought it'd be more heavy, imperial, right? I thought it'd be just kind of wreck you, but dude, it's dangerously drinkable, crushable.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately.
Yeah, no, definitely, and it's a nice, especially as like the imperial stout, just because so often they're overly like chocolatey or overly like sweet. Mm-hmm. Where this, with the roast from the coffee and everything, actually helps it drink a little easier. It isn't quite like just drinking chocolate syrup.
That's right. I mean, when I was brewing this, it was way, way before the time of pastry stouts, and I don't want to get diabetes when I'm drinking my beers and or
like
stouts.
Your feet?
I do pour some out for Wilford Brimley, but yep. No, I don't. I don't. I can appreciate those styles, but that's not. If I want to drink a beer that I'm making, I want to be able to drink the entire 16-ounce can. While I'd love to share beer, I want to be able to drink the whole one myself and not just have 1 or 2 ounces and be like, oh.
Because no one wants to buy those 16-ounce cans or, 22-ounce bottles that you get halfway through and you're like, well, I'm done, but I don't have anyone else, to share with. Like, makes perfect sense.
But, talk about breakfast beers. This is, the perfect breakfast beer. I mean, you've got toasted oatmeal. You have cocoa nibs. You got your milk with the lactose. Tons of coffee. And it's like 9.6%. So,
a little hair on the dog right there.
Giddy up.
Get your day started off right.
That's right. Or draw yourself a hot bath.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, shower beer, bath beer, hot tub
beer, hot tub beer, yeah, mm-hmm. All beer.
There's no wrong answer with
that.
It's good. Well, it's a known fact that you can't day drink if you don't start in the morning.
Oh, is that so?
Mm-hmm. Jay, put that on a shirt right now. But Jay, you haven't had this one, so what's your, like, talk to me about it.
So, like I was saying, the roast is great. Really complimentary of the stout and the style. Aroma definitely has that coffee pushed forward versus like the uncommon Kentucky common. It also has the coffee forward, but it's a lot lighter of a roast versus this one has that darker, almost more espresso-y roast to it, which is nice, and that falls through into your flavor versus the first one being a little bit more, you have it in the aroma and then you get the caramel and everything in your actual flavor, and the coffee falls off a little bit. Both of them are excellent. Coffee beers, like I said earlier, are hard to make. So
they are.
No, both of these are very, very good. My preference is probably towards the uncommon Kentucky common, just because I love a dark lager. It's one of my favorite things, mm-hmm. or even steam beers. Mm-hmm. And so having a very similar concept to what a Kentucky Common is
right.
along both of those lines, it's, yeah, it just hits what I'm looking for inside, like a very easy drinking, balanced beer.
Yeah, no, I mean, the Kentucky Common style to me was also intriguing because, the dark color is coming just from just like a touch of roasted malt.
Mm-hmm.
Just enough to give it that color, but it's certainly not heavy or no. thick anywhere close to a porter or stout. But yeah, it's got nice brown color. And
Chris, you happy with these two beers?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
yeah.
Good. Next version of it, is there anything you know, take out the coffee? Are we going to do anything else with it? Are we going to make a smoked version? Are we going to do a...
Yes, I mean, bring some Rausch beers.
Like we had a Rausch beer.
Rausch beer was for Oktoberfest,
right?
We
did. We had that as well.
How did I miss that? Okay.
So not necessarily taking away or replacing an ingredient, but we might just have some of this Red Sea Rift in barrels currently.
Oh, here we go.
So we do have a portion in maple syrup barrels.
That's really cool.
Oh, that's awesome.
And a portion in bourbon barrels.
That's really cool.
So they're going to hibernate and age and do their thing in the barrel for...
Jay and I will be there.
As long as
yeah,
they need.
Definitely and, let us know. Especially with the maple syrup, because I've had only a handful that are like maple syrup adjuncts.
Mm-hmm.
How are you keeping it from over-fermenting with the maple syrup?
Well,
see how it turns out.
So they were originally maple syrup barrels, but then there was whiskey in them post...
Got
and
it,
then,
so...
No, I have that wrong. They were whiskey barrels at first, drained. Maple syrup was aged in them, drained. And then we got them and added the beer. So we're not... I mean, there was certainly a little bit of maple syrup residual in the barrels when we got them. But we weren't adding extra maple syrup
inside
of barrels.
That makes a lot more sense.
Little hints of it, little touch of maple syrup.
I mean, if you never had barrel-aged maple syrup, I mean... You haven't lived. It is delicious.
Man, you're taking the beer or the breakfast beer to a new level.
I know, right. I mean, yeah. So when the barrel aged version comes out in a year or so, watch out.
Look at you.
Brunch is like elevate your brunch.
When it comes to darker beers and stouts, how come anytime I've come here, I've never seen a stout on tap or a stout on nitro.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a stout?
We do. It's called Oat Slayer, and it is a oatmeal milk stout that we have on Nitro.
Gotcha. It's on tap right
it's
now?
It's currently not available right now, but it was last year.
I haven't had it. How's your stout here? I mean, is it pretty... You have it year-round, or is it just kind of a seasonal thing?
No, just a small batch seasonal. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. Let me know when that one is, because I'm a sucker for oatmeal stouts. Sucker.
Come back January, February.
I'll be here,
I'll be back.
You text me, I'll be here.
All right.
So you got the stouts. You said you're going to mess with kettle sours. You could mess with kettle sours. You could.
To me, I don't need to if the Philly sour is as wonderful as we know it can be. So then
going off that, different kind of styles, kind of funky. You released a beer that caught my attention. I kind of half rolled my eyes and I said, what the fuck, Chris?
Mm-hmm.
You released a Pez Saison. What
sure
in
did.
God's name did you put Pez in a Saison? And tell me about it, because like I didn't get a chance to try it. So tell me, why did you put Pez in a Saison? Why a Saison? And have you released a bunch of Saisons? Was that your first Saison?
That was our first Saison.
Really?
And one, you missed it. And you missed out big time.
I did. Because
it was a fantastic beer. All right, so I love the creativity of making beer. I love the science of making beer. I'm not into just throwing random ingredients and food items into the beer without a purpose.
Okay.
So the story with the Pez Saison, I've been collecting Pez dispensers since I was in seventh grade.
No way.
Just looking over here in the brewery, you have
Homer Simpson
couple
one
huge
really
ones.
Bad. Look behind you.
Yeah.
Do you notice those?
Yes.
God damn.
So I currently own... a couple thousand.
Shut the fuck up, really?
Pez dispensers. That's not an exaggeration. Yes, my entire bedroom in middle and high school was lined with Pez dispensers. And so, yeah, you could say I'm a Pez head. Yeah, that's
Pez
a thing.
Pez head?
Yeah,
is that a term? Head. I love
it,
that.
It is, it is. It was always in the back of my head, like, okay, I'm brewing beer. I love Pez candy. Why not make a Pez beer? What style would be appropriate for that? Well, most Belgian beers use simple candy sugars in their recipes. Pez is a very simple candy sugar. I mean, that's what it is. So I decided on orange Pez, because it's one of my favorites, and we dumped 10 pounds of orange Pez into my old homebrew kettle and made a saison, and it was awesome. So,
no way.
Did you crush them or just toss them in whole?
We just tossed them in. I was a little worried that they wouldn't dissolve, but my fears were...
They dissolved.
They dissolved pretty quickly.
Wow.
Right. So to me, it wasn't just like another like kid's candy or cereal thrown in to the beer as a gag or a fad. Like there was an intention and purpose behind one, Pez, and two, the style of beer that went into. And if you come to our tasting room, I have a curated Pez display that changes seasonally. And you can,
no way,
you can
see, cool.
see what's going on.
So going off that question, I had no idea about it. I'm like, what the? Because for me, a saison's like a you don't fuck with kind of style, right? And so I saw that. I'm like, okay, I didn't know what happened. There was no story behind it. I didn't know this story. I'm like, what? Why? I just wanted to know why that happened.
Why that happened?
But it inspired my cream ale, which I made a Twinkie cream ale, which, I mean, everyone rolled their eyes at, but I had fucking fun making that some bitch.
I bet.
And it smelled and tastes like Twinkies.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, okay. Because Chad Hopkins said it best to me is, craft beer is meant to be crafted. Mm-hmm. It's fun. And if you're not having fun making beer, get the fuck out of this, the industry. Like, get out. And so that's why, for me, it was, I've never been one of those that it hones in on traditional beers. Like, it has to be A, B, C, D, or fuck you. And so I saw, I'm like, wait, to me, a Saison is like, you don't fuck with. It's like a Pilsner.
Why not? No,
I don't know, but.
No.
But then you did, I'm like, wait, Chris makes good beer. It's award winning. Why did he put Pez in it? And so now, I've wanted to ask you that question for so long.
Oh, man.
And so now
man.
I know. I'm like, okay.
Fuck with Saisons.
I love it. I love
Saisons
it.
Saisons are the complete fuck with category to me. They are such a farm... I mean, the farmhouse style. I mean, those brewers in Belgium, they were using adjuncts of whatever...
What's available. Yeah.
Available, they were growing on the farms.
You're blowing mine. I have Saison ideas now.
I mean, have you had Fantôme beers?
No.
That brewery in Belgium, Fantôme, he makes the craziest Saisons. And, I mean, no, like, to me, Saison is such a huge category that you can almost add anything to and call it a Saison. And
frankly, you can add anything to. You can have so many off flavors with it and still not fuck up because it's a really good style base. Probably one of my all-time favorite homebrew beers that I ever had, because I do a bunch of homebrew competitions, was a cucumber Saison. Tastes like pickles. Was phenomenal. It just absolutely wonderful.
Oh man, don't get me started on pickles.
No, but Chris, you helped me when you released that. You helped me realize that as a brewer, to not, you know, hold back my creativity. So, like, thank you for doing that, because I thought you did something that I thought was impossible or unthinkable, unfathomable, and you did it. I'm just disappointed I didn't get to try it. So. My question or favor is make it again or just make it for me because I want to try it because I want to see that creativity inside of a style that I respect and I love so much. Saison's one of my favorite styles.
Mm-hmm. It'll come back for sure.
Hell yeah. And I want to be there for it. I want to smell that. I want to try some of your Pez, dude.
Oh, so good. Well, I mean, I've got plenty of Pez you can try right now. But no, the trick was individually unwrapping 10 pounds of candy packs.
I was going to ask, like, did you just call up the factory and be like, send me 10 pounds, or did you go out and actually buy 10 pounds
worth? We went out and bought 10 pounds of bulk orange Canny Pez, yes. But then had to unwrap hundreds and hundreds and hundreds packs of Pez. That's okay, because it was, you know, little Pez for the beer, little Pez for me.
I like that. I like that a lot.
Maybe it wasn't quite 10 pounds that ended up in beer.
It's like 8.5.
It's a lot of Pez.
So with that being said, what's some new ideas in your mind that you haven't released yet, like the Pez Saison, that you want to release here in the near future?
I mean, the biggest one is this Philly Sour Double IPA. I mean, we've been playing around with the test batches since the spring, and the way it fermented Double IPA for us was, I mean, it was like a game changer on how a hoppy Double IPA can be sour. It was so good. So that's the biggest one we're working on at the moment that will be out in a couple weeks.
And then what about another funky one?
Sure, yeah. I mean, with the possibilities of this Philly Sour yeast.
Yeah, I mean, it opens
up a whole nother world of potential. That being said, I mean, some of the test batches we did were not great at all. I mean, we took the wort from the wheat wine, soured it, and it was garbage. I mean, it was just not good at all. But
that's the thing is, if it's not good, you're not going to release it, and I respect that, because some people will just full send.
No, right. I mean, these are like little 5-gallon batches.
Sure.
Just to see what it's going to do in different conditions. But we've tried that yeast in almost all of our base 5% beer wort and fermented it. And for the most part, it's been fantastic.
Gotcha.
The higher ABVs, it's so new to us that
Right.
Yeah.
It's just you have no idea.
We have not done enough experimentation with it and testing and trials to...
And that's the fun part about it, you know, fail, right. Test, continue, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. You keep talking about the Rauch beer, so what a sour Rauch? I don't know.
Uh-oh.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah.
I mean, I would definitely still try it, for sure.
With smoked pineapple? Yeah.
That'd be really cool,
too. Well, if you get that sour working, with, like, roasted pineapple...
Uh-huh.
Like, whatever standard, like Berliner Weiss malt bill, but throw it inside a tequila barrel. Tequila barrel with the roasted pineapple is phenomenal.
Wow, Jay. Jeez.
How are you doing?
Wow. So then on that, I'm a huge fan of the Pink Boot Society.
Uh-huh.
Those girls, badass, right?
Absolutely.
Kicking ass, taking names. Have we done a Pink Boots here at Level Crossing?
We have. We did one last year.
What was it? What was it? Was it a hazy, an IPA?
It was a Pink Boots Pale Ale.
Cool.
Yeah, it was delicious.
And then we're doing one in the near future, hopefully?
Yeah, I think the next one that's coming out will be in the spring.
Fantastic.
The hops are just now available to purchase.
Yeah.
I think the intention last year, correct me if I'm wrong, was to have a Pink Boots festival. All the breweries that did their Pink Boots beers were going to... showcase them and have them available at the festival, but
good old 2020, right?
Sure. Yeah. COVID and all that good stuff,
right.
That didn't happen.
Yeah, well, that's awesome. I love that, and because you still support others, and I love that. Because Chris, I see you at a lot of events, mm-hmm. and that's really cool that you're still out there. You're not just being to yourself. Mm-hmm. You're creating, and you're sharing that, and I love that about you. With that being said, without biasness, what's one of the breweries out there in Utah that you think is just fucking killing it?
I mean, I love Tamplin. I love Kevin. His brewery is doing great things.
Yeah.
Stop by there regularly to have, whether it's a traditional German lager or his hazies or barrel aged beers.
Yeah.
He's doing some awesome things.
And what about distillery? What do you think with the local distillery that is just killing it right now in Utah?
We have a pretty heavy High West. Distilling background, and so I've had many a High West evening and enjoyed lots of their product.
What's a distillery in Utah that you feel like should be more recognized as not recognized, not loud enough right now?
Oh, man, Dented Brick.
Dented Brick?
Check them out. Killer product, killer people.
Yeah, Harley's doing good things too. He's out there helping out.
Fuck yeah, Tui.
Yeah.
You're awesome.
Absolutely.
Keep it going, buddy.
Absolutely. Favorite cider in Utah?
I'm not a huge in the cider, but I haven't been let down by Mountain West. So
Mountain West. Do you have a specific style from Mountain West that you just think is awesome?
I recall they had a dry hop cider years ago that it was great to see how those hops presented themselves in a different product than beer.
Really cool. Cider is really, I mean, I always joke with my boss. I go, if you ever fire me in the brewing industry, I'm making cider because cider is fantastic, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Chris, give me some goals for Level Crossing for 2022 and give me some personal goals as a brewer for 2022.
One of the things we're going to do in the next year is ramp up our barrel age program. And so currently we have the beers we have in barrels, we have Red Sea Rift currently in barrels.
We also Jay, we're there for that.
Yeah, definitely.
We also have the wheat wine in barrels. And we'll be putting, you know, a lot of the Red Feather beers that we'll be rebrewing will also be going into barrels.
Cool.
Potentially be on the lookout for barrel aged Doppelbock and Black Album and Barley Wine. It's you know, they're all on the table. Because
I like that a lot.
I love barrel aged beers as much as every other beer lover
out there.
Yeah, that's so, 2022 should be a fun
year, right?
Well, yes, they will get into barrels then, but depending on how long it takes to age the beer, they may come out in 2022 or whenever the beer is ready.
Yeah. So, for Chris Dietrich, as a brewer, 2022, what's some goals you have for yourself, brother?
I have a really fantastic staff of supporting brewers and cellar people right now, and my goal is to be able to give them the necessary tools and abilities and knowledge to keep making the beers that we all want to make and allow them their creativity to make the beers they want to make. And because I know what it's like to make my recipes and have it available and share with the public. And I love that. And I want my employees to feel that same awesome feeling of, you know, creating something and sharing that with others.
Fuck yeah, Chris. That's a beautiful way to say it. And that right there, you're going up my notch of awesomeness, dude. Like, that's awesome. Thank you so much for saying that. That's really cool. Because seeing and working for someone who wants to push you and wants to push your creativity and wants to see your growth is admirable. Because when that's stunted, I don't want to work for you, right? And I want to work for someone like you when it comes to that creativity and you want, like, hey, you have a voice. Let me hear it. And that, and the fact that you're doing that within the walls of Level Crossing, fuck yeah, dude.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Gary right there. Dude, just first batch Vienna Lager, JBF Bronze.
Yeah.
So fucking rad. Great job, Gary.
Thumbs up from the OG, man.
Yeah, man. It's awesome. I mean, I was so proud when we were at Great American Beer. Well, we're at Craft Beer Brewers Conference this fall, but they had the Great American Beer Festival Awards at the same time. So, get in here, Gary.
Get in here, Gary.
Dude, when we fucking won bronze at JBF this year, like, how badass was that?
So, Gary, in the microphone, tell me, when you... This is your Vienna Lager, right? This is your idea. So, when... Yeah. This is your first attempt at the Vienna Lager, if I'm mistaken?
Yeah.
So, what's it like for you to win a bronze medal at one of, if not the biggest beer competitions in North America?
It's pretty undescribable. It was incredible. It was like all the emotions. It was like just totally floored, like super stoked, and then also like a little like actual emotional. Like,
yeah, that's awesome, dude.
You know, it was super cool, and then once we like went up on the stage and stood up there, it was like, holy shit, this is real. This happened.
That's awesome, dude.
So it was super cool. And it also sparked something in me where it was like, we got to do this again. We got to do it again with either.
It kind of reignited that passion and make, hey, let's go. Yep. Like, we're not done, dude.
Exactly.
I love that, Gary. That's awesome, man.
It's super cool.
And congrats, dude, by the way.
Thank you.
You don't get enough recognition. Congrats, dude.
Thank you. That's super
cool. Like, I'm not envious, or I'm like, fuck yeah, I want to be there. I want to be there. You know what I'm saying? Like,
that's really cool, dude. It's a team effort. It's total team effort.
Right.
You know, from the brew day to the day it gets packaged, it's a total team effort. So
that's awesome, dude.
It's certainly not one person. It's a group of people that made that beer happen.
And the camaraderie here is fantastic. And don't lose that. If you lose that, I'm out. You know what I'm saying? But keep going, dude.
Thank you.
That passion, keep pushing. Keep pushing. You got good things coming.
Next one.
Oh, shit.
Doppelbock.
Yep. We got a Doppelbock going right now. That should be pretty awesome, too. So.
Yeah, obviously, in bronze medal. Come on, let's go. Yeah. Let's go.
That one's a ways out, but...
Nonetheless.
Maybe you'll see it by the end of the year. We'll see.
That's cool, dude. Hell yeah, Gary. Well, I appreciate your time, brother.
Yeah, I'm going to go back to cleaning the kettle, but...
go for it, homie.
I figured I'd stop in and say hi.
Oh, yeah, man.
Thanks for coming in. Perfect timing, actually.
You want some beer?
Yeah, I do.
No, but Chris, you know, the fact that you have someone like that, you know, working for you must be pretty nice. You have someone who's passionate, who wants to kick ass, who still wants to make beer, and is sitting here at fucking 8 p.m. and still making beer. Like, that's, that's really cool, you know, because most people be like, clock in, clock out, fuck off. But... obviously, you have staff, Jay and I are seeing it right now, that want to work here and want to continue to try to become better. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And don't lose that, man. Don't lose that. And don't get comfortable. Do not get comfortable.
No. It's. I love being able to take a back seat and let other people shine.
Yeah.
And my goal is to give them the tools to be able to do that.
Yeah.
They're all crushing it right now. And... it's awesome to see, and
I love when you light up when you say these kind of things, and you light. People can't see this, but when you say this, Chris, you light up, and Jay and I can see it. Like, I love it. You have one last beer for us.
Two last beers.
Oh shit! Two last beers. Go ahead and explain it to us for real quick.
There are two. So I have two awesome kids. I've got a son and daughter, and when my son was born, I brewed a big American barley wine.
Cool.
With the intention of saving some of those bottles for 21 years to share with him then.
Oh.
And so the recipe was designed as this, you know, very, very hop-forward American barley wine with the hops being a preservative that maybe in 21 years... there would be some remnant of hop character to this beer. I have no idea. I've never aged the beer 21 years. That sounds kind of silly. But no. So I made this beer for my son on a homebrew scale 8 years ago now. And it was one of the first Red Feather beers I wanted to do and had in mind when we started talking about this kind of special line of beers.
That's really cool.
And so it's nearly an identical. The recipe is very, very similar to what I did back then. The malts are different, only because Solstice malt did not exist at the time. And so shout out to James at Solstice.
Good old James Weed.
James Weed, fantastic person, fantastic malts.
Great guy.
So this is an aggressively hopped American barley wine. Meant to be aged long term.
Gotcha.
So the companion to that is a wheat wine. It was for my daughter, and she's 4.5, and so we got a barley wine and a wheat wine. We got brother
and
sister beers.
All Solstice, all of it.
That's correct.
Wow,
that's correct.
Good for you, dude. Supporting local, I like that.
So yeah, and the wheat wine utilizes hops that also have white wine characteristics like Nelson Savant and Halotau Blanc, and so it's a if the White Salamander wasn't the perfect brunch beer, wheat wine might just be the more perfect beer.
So cheers on that.
All right, so we're starting the wheat wine.
Absolutely.
And again, almost like the Kentucky Common style, I feel the wheat wine style, there's not many beer drinkers that have ever experienced this style of beer before. Sure, people have had barley wines. I love barley wines. Barley wine for life.
Yeah.
It's
tattooed on my ass, I know.
That's right. But the wheat wine, I've had several, but it's not a very common, commonly
really
available commercial style of beer.
It's very hard to find a wheat wine.
And then at that, a non-barrel-aged version
exactly.
of the wheat wine.
Yep.
That being said, we do have wheat wine in white wine and red wine barrels right now.
Red wine barrels, you said?
Uh-huh.
Oh, wow.
Uh-huh.
Man, this is a brunch beer. Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
It's also 10.5%, so...
Oh, God. Here we go, getting wrecked. Jay, I need your palate on this one.
My palate on this one. It's definitely a lot more citrusy.
Mm-hmm.
That citrus really does come through quite a bit. I like what you're saying with like that Nelson Sauvignon. Mm-hmm. It has some of that like Sauvignon Blanc, gooseberry notes. Right. They're just really, they're fun. They're interesting. They're light. So versus your barley wines and everything that we'll get to, like it's a lot lighter, heavy beer. As hard as that is, to understand.
Again, it's to me, it drinks like a session wheat wine.
Yeah.
It does, dude.
And, I mean, a lot, and then the hop flavor and bitterness and character of the hops are so much more rounded and smoother than you'll see in the barley wine. Some of that's from Solstice's delicious red wheat. It's great. And just the kind of hop schedule and just the way the hops are utilized in this beer, it's just it's more a silky, velvety mouthfeel,
mm-hmm.
rounder, less aggressive hop presence
Damn.
Than her older brother, barley wine.
Right?
It's, yeah.
It's like very appropriate, is what you're telling me?
I mean, honestly, I think personality-wise, they might be flipped, but I didn't know that when they were born.
Yeah.
But it's all good.
Let's try the barley wine.
Yeah.
Let's.
Last time I had this was when I interviewed James Weed, and we talked about this. It just came out.
Ah.
And I have one of my fridges aging right now. Put it in the fridge. I did.
Let it age.
Yeah. So this will age very, very well. Like you're saying, it has that aggressively hopped right up front feeling to it. And it almost comes off because of that closer to like Imperial Red or something. Just because you have that aggressive hops and you still have the caramel and the heavy grain like complexity and notes, but as that ages, that's just going to get like the molasses, like real, real deep caramel characteristics.
Now, this is already 11 months old, so it does have a little bit of age on it because his birthday is coming up in a couple of weeks. Both the beers, the names of the beers written out in Roman numerals are my kids' birthdays.
Oh, cool.
So
that's awesome.
The barley wine is 12, 11, 13, and the wheat wine is 7/25, 17. But yeah, the intention of those beers was to age long term, and
that barley wine though, it's wine esque, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I like that little touch of grapefruit peel in there. I like that.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Wow,
They're
both great, dude. I'm excited to see how they are because I'm not opening them for a couple of years, brother.
Why?
I want to
buy more and drink them as.
So I gotta buy two, age one, drink the one.
Buy a case. Yeah,
you gotta buy 20.
Buy a case.
Chris is over here upselling the beers right now.
Buy a case and drink two a year and see how they age for the next 12 years.
I like that, yeah.
But then you have to buy a case a year to then. Anyway,
I have enough fridge space.
My
there,
kids' bro. 21st birthdays are going to be
fantastic.
They're going to be fun.
Pinkies up for sure.
Because I will have a vertical epic of 21 years of these beers.
That's really cool, dude.
That's really fun. Yeah.
Look at you. You got passion behind the beer. There's a story behind each and every one of your beers. It comes from music, you know, the aspect of coming from a religious aspect, mm-hmm. from your trips to Europe, mm-hmm. Personal life struggles, and going through in life. You have your kids. Like, it's everything's in here, dude. And sitting here with you, I'm now understanding more of Level Crossing. Mm-hmm. And the brewer, the artist behind the brew. It's fantastic. And damn you, Chris, because you're doing a great job. And like I told you earlier, don't get comfortable. Don't be comfortable. Keep pushing the pedal. There's a reason why you've won medals. It's not dumb luck. Like, you're doing a great thing. You still have that passion. Every time JR and I are watching, whenever you speak, you light up, dude. You light up with these beers. You light up about your employees. You light up about your kids. Keep going, dude. And the fact that you took time out of your night to hang out with me and Jay, like, thank you so much for taking the time, kicking ass, sharing your beverages and stories. And Jay, like, thanks for sharing this memory with me.
Oh, yeah. No, this... all of your beers are exceptional. I mean, yeah, you have a lot of passion behind each one. You have a fun story. And it's what's nice, and especially with, like, even more than just that, like, giving back to the... you know, community, and like having that story of like the red feather and like having an open seat for whoever is coming through. Mm-hmm. It's a really wholesome, fun place to be. So
I love it. It's like the second career I always wanted to do.
Yeah. And you're doing it, dude. And you're having fun with it.
Absolutely.
You keep having fun with it.
Absolutely.
But what for, as taste masters, what can I do for you to help personify you and your art?
Man, it's what you're doing. I mean, you're giving voice to all the craftspeople and artisans in our community. So, I mean, our community is very small, but we are very kick-ass and dedicated.
We are,
and for the most part, very giving and helping community.
Yeah.
And that's I would never be where I am now without the help and support of the other brewers in Utah. And yeah, I mean, I came from my garage 15 gallons at a time to brewing 1,000 gallons at a time.
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
that's insane.
That was ridiculous. It was. I mean, it was in the first... I mean, it was a... it was quite the big learning curve. And so, yeah, I mean, shit, I mean, nobody that I called said no. Like, every single person I called for help or advice or grains or hops or yeast, whatever, like, this community is so badass.
Yeah.
And supportive of each other that, yeah, shout out to everybody. I mean...
oh, for sure. And I love that. And you can't be an asshole and thrive in this society, in this community. You can't. No. We're a huge family. Mm-hmm. And I love that about it. So, Chris, if there's anything I can do personally as a friend, let me know. As a brewer, let me know. As taste masters, let me know. I got many hats, I guess. Jay, same thing. If you need anything, let me know. And I know if you ever want a palette... Jay is the
one. If you ever need Pella, if you ever need anyone trained on your staff, whatever, you let me know. I'm here.
Like, that'd be awesome. Yeah.
This is what I like to do. Yeah. So, yeah.
But again, Jay, thanks for your time today. Thanks for being here. Chris, keep kicking ass. And, dude, every time I see you, I better get a bro hug every single fucking time.
Not a problem. Not a problem.
Again, guys, thank you so much. And that will do for this episode. Until the next beverage, my friends.
This has been another episode of The Tastemasters. You can find us on Instagram at @the_Tastemasters, on Twitter at The Tastemasters, and on Facebook as The Tastemasters. Like, share, subscribe, leave us a review, tell your friends, and thanks for listening.
produced and recorded at Fuse Audio. Give them a follow at Fuse_audio.